Good afternoon. It is 2:05, September 6, 2023. Randy Christman, Chairman of the Public Service Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugenhoffert and Julie Fedorchek. We just concluded an informal hearing from the same company on a different wind repowering. That was Ashtabula 3. This is an informal hearing on Ashtabula 1. This is case number PU-23-252. I want to emphasize this is an informal hearing, so it involves only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts that develop, we'll have to wrap up and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant goes first, but even ahead of that, I'll say I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Haugenhoffert, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay. I will turn it over to you then, Commissioner Fedorchek, for as a portfolio holder to take the lead on it, and if we can start with the introductions around the table.
Perfect. All right. I don't have any opening comments. We can just start with the introductions and then move into the presentation from the company.
One thing I do want before the introductions, it's going to seem redundant, but for the recording, please don't say just like the previous case. Or, you know, we need to go through and have everything on the recording.
Brian, do you want to start with introductions?
Brian Johnson, PSC staff. Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Bryce Haugen, Otter Tail Power Company. And I believe we do have an individual or two on the phone call as well.
Randy Sinstelen with Otter Tail Power Company.
Molly Smith, Fredrickson and Byron, on behalf of Otter Tail Power Company.
Lisa McFarland, attorney for the Otter Tail Power Company.
Chris Hansen, PSC staff.
Adam Renfin, PSC staff.
Steve. Steve Cortino with Liona.
And Steve is mostly here just listening, but we appreciate his presence. All right.
Do you need to introduce who's on online?
No, I do not.
Both along.
You're on your own. She might have been offended she didn't get to introduce herself the last time.
I'm sure I'll hear about messing that one up for the last. Yes. So thanks for having us here this afternoon to talk about this wind upgrade project. This is for the Ashtabula 1 facility. This facility is one that has served us really well over the last 15 years. It is one of the higher producers in MISO. And so it's a great energy resource north of Valley City. And the upgrades we're talking about today are going to allow us to take even better advantage of the wind resource there and increase our energy output at existing facilities going forward. With that, have Molly go through the request of the certification and amendment.
So this is similar to other upgrade filings that Otter Tail has submitted to the commission. We have a certification filing that's supported by an environmental and regulatory compliance memorandum. That includes an acoustic assessment with the sound waivers associated, shadow flicker assessment results, FAA filings, microwave beam path study, cultural resources report and unanticipated discoveries plan, and an IPAC resource list. This project is going to increase the nameplate capacity, does have a capacity limit within the orders and certificates that were issued previously, so we are asking for an amendment to remove those limitations.
This project for Ashtabula 1 is expected to take place in Q3 of 2025. The first major component delivery will be at the end of June of 2025. As part of this Ashtabula 1 upgrade, we also will be doing Ashtabula 3 in the same area. And so the way that they're located is Ashtabula 3 is on the north west corner, and Ashtabula 1 then is in the center. There's 32 turbines for Ashtabula 1, and then finalizing the work in 2025 will be the southern half of Ashtabula 3. So it'll be done in conjunction with upgrades to our other wind facilities in the area. The replacement of the components will all take place within that time frame. Expectation from the installation is that there'll be 3 to 4 turbines completed a week. And so the math on that then is the 32 turbines divided by 3 to 4 per week is what is expected. And so you get the time frame of 2 to 3 months expectation for the completion of the equipment upgrade.
Were you done on this page? Or?
I was just going to mention that all the equipment replacements are done above tower, and that there isn't adjustments to the foundations or the towers or collection lines. This is all done above tower.
Okay, I want to step back to what Molly had said just before you took over, Bryce. Regarding the nameplate capacity, if I recall right from Laverne, the capacity went up because that's just what the new blades allowed, but your interconnection didn't allow for any more energy to be put in, so you weren't increasing the energy anymore. Is that the case here too?
That is correct. So these are 1.5 megawatt turbines, but the generator technology will be 1.6 megawatt because that's now what is currently available. They don't have the 1.5, it's only the 1.6, but the intent is not to increase the generation delivered to the interconnection point. Okay. It will stay at the same level that it currently is at.
Okay, thank you.
On to slide 4, this figure 2 shows the tower, the nacelle, and then the hub and the blades. Ashtabula 1 currently has a 77-meter rotor diameter, and it will increase to a 91-meter rotor diameter. And we expect that it'll be approximately a 20% increase in the megawatt hours generated each year.
71 increased what?
To be 77 meters, the rotor diameter, and it'll increase to 91-meter rotor diameter. The illustration that we have here is of the hub and the inside of the nacelle. Again, the nacelle does not change, but there's components inside that do. And so we replace the hub and the nose cone spinner, the pitch drives that are within the nose cone spinner. We replace the rotor shaft and bearings, and then the generator is refurbished to accommodate the larger blades.
Do you have to remove the nacelle for that to happen, or is it able to be done once the rotor is pulled off?
We do not remove the nacelle.
Okay.
How much oil is in one of these?
We don't know the answer to that, but we can relay that.
It doesn't, I mean, just sometime to staff or at a convenience. It doesn't have anything to do with the certificate, but I just became curious right now.
We can provide that to Mr. Renfant,
sir,
of the staff for this.
Commissioner, you're saying you don't need that as a late filed exhibit?
Correct.
Okay.
I do not.
Yes.
No.
This slide 6.
I have the answer.
Has
wow.
Roughly 55 gallons.
Somebody's online listening.
Wow.
Question on your presentation. You were going from 77 to 91 on the other one, and from 82.5, or on this one, and 82.5 to 91 on the previous one, but you show 20% more energy on both of them. wouldn't it be less of an increase on the one that had, that was already at 82.5?
Yes, it might be sandbagging a little bit on the approximately 20% more energy. This okay. one, this facility, it does have a net capacity factor. The three-year average is mid-upper 30s, and we do expect it to be at 50%. Okay. So that'd be more like a 25 to 30% increase after repower, yes. On slide 6, there's a turbine layout, and once complete, this facility is still going to operate at the 45 megawatts that it currently is operating at. That's 48 megawatts that it's currently operating at. There's no change to the generator interconnect. There's no change to the collection lines, and there's no change to the substation. What ends up happening with the upgrades is that we produce near the 48 megawatts more often after the upgrade takes place.
Are the green tracks the participating landowners and the non-green the non-participants? Is that?
That's yes. correct.
We do have contracts in place with GE. This proceeding and your approval are an important part of meeting the criteria needed within those contracts. We do expect that the blades will be manufactured in North Dakota and produced in North Dakota to be used for this project. The increased energy output as a result of this upgrade will also increase the property tax, state taxes paid for property taxes, that energy portion of that calculation. And the upgrades also end up maximizing useful life and reducing the costs long term. At repower, the facilities will at least have a 20-year life.
I have a question regarding the sourcing of blades. I mean, this is your third project, so I'm just curious on the timeline. Using how long do you have to put in your order to get this to stay on time with your project timeline and completion?
So the contracts are signed, and GE, as they procure the materials for this, they have global sourcing, so
yep.
They're not buying just the 32 components needed for our 32 turbines. But they would say that part of their current global sourcing efforts our projects are considered part of that sourcing that they are already doing.
Bryce, I think she was asking about the lead times
yep.
for the turbines. Would you like to answer that?
I think I'm misunderstanding.
It's okay. When we first started working with GE, I think we had identified Landon as the first project, and we were able to get in the queue there,
uh-huh.
and they were telling us it would be a minimum of about 13 to 15 months before they could manufacture blades for that facility. For the remaining three facilities, I know Bryce had mentioned in a previous hearing that we're looking at 2025
yep.
repowerings, and with GE's queue now, we will not be able to get blades earlier than that. So
that's part of your timeline as far as the supplies.
Correct. So when we enter into our contracts and we give them a notice to proceed as part of our contracting process, that puts us in their production queue. And as Bryce said, they'll be ordering materials for us and then planning when they're going to be manufacturing our blades. While we're all hopeful that they can move us up a little bit sooner in 2025, we are not able to plan on that.
So how does that affect, that lead time is quite, it's out there. How does that affect your other contracts if needed? As far as some might say, well, I can't wait for this project, so I go work on this project. I mean, it seems like in dealing with supply chain issues, workforce issues, that's quite a management of.
So fortunately for the construction work on this project, the other big contracting piece is for the civil work for the projects, and we just put out an RFP seeking bids for that work September 1st. And while we don't have any responses back, We're hoping that we get competitive bids there. And the nice thing about the civil work is we're hoping that we can stage that out sequentially so all that work can be done back to back to back, and we'll realize cost savings by getting that done in advance of the projects. Smaller vendors and contracts will probably not be sourced until much closer to construction dates as needed.
So overall, how many different contracts do you need on a project like this? Approximate. I'm just curious.
Yeah, our General Electric contract will be our primary contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, that includes the installation. That's all, and all the components are mm-hmm. part of that. So it'll be the GE contract as well as a civil contract. Those mm-hmm. would be the two main ones that we'd have as part of this.
Yeah.
And there'll be subcontractors off of those main contracts.
Okay. Thank you.
When you're doing these contracts, is it you or is it the company that's going to install these that makes arrangements for road permits and stuff for hauling these things around?
Right. It'll depend on from where the components come from. There'll be the responsibility will be on the company or General Electric or their subcontractor to get them to within the project area. And then once it's within the project area, that would be on Otter Tail Power to do the civil work for roads and permits and things within that area.
Is there any limit to how long of a blade you can haul around on public roads?
Not aware of any.
I would assume DOT has, North Dakota DOT has restrictions on oversized loads, but I don't know what it is offhand. I can look into it if you want.
I happen to know from camping and measuring cameras and boats hooked together. The standard in North Dakota is 75 feet, but there are exceptions depending on which roads you're driving on. I think there's exceptions depending on the road up to 100 to 125 feet is kind of considered standard.
But here we're obviously not talking about standard. I mean, and then 300 feet.
Yeah, once you get past that, you have to get an oversized and sometimes overweight. So sometimes they're too long or too wide, so you're getting a permit from the applicable road authority for that. If they exceed the weight limits for the roads, then you're getting an overweight permit for that component.
Well, I will tell you, it has nothing to do with your project, but someone else's. I was extraordinarily frustrated on Monday with three of these being hauled to wherever and trying to make a left turn to get on the interstate and having trouble making that turn. And there we sat, backed up, no way to get past, no way to do anything different. And there everyone else is just held up while they try and figure it out. And it's
why were they stuck?
Because it's too long, can't make the corner.
Oh, they couldn't make the corner.
They're sitting on an overpass trying to go turn left. And
those people don't get paid enough, whoever's driving them around.
neither does all the traffic that has deadlines to meet that are sitting behind them and can't get anywhere.
You didn't get paid anything.
Nothing.
I did want to make one clarification of all the component work and replacement, that's all above tower. You know, the civil work would be on the surrounding roads. So, and then there's also, we have a foundation assessment that's done by an outside engineering group. And if there were something needed foundation-wise to ensure the foundations, that would happen around the base of the tower, but it wouldn't be related to the turbine components that are being replaced. So I wanted to clarify that work is not happening above tower. That would be on the roads and surrounding area.
So if we look at the next slide, this walks through what's been submitted and that it complies with the requirements of Section 49.22.03.3A of the North Dakota Century Code. The project is wholly within the site that was designated for the project by the Commission. It improves the existing energy generation technology. It complies with the Commission's current exclusionary and avoidance area requirements, including the turbine setbacks. We do have two property line setback variances that are requested for four turbines, again, two property lines, but four turbines. And one turbine is within a county roadway setback variance. For those variances, we're seeking waivers from the property owners, and we're seeking approval from Barnes County that we will be going to Barnes County on the 12th for the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting on the variance. And then hopefully those will be issued on the 19th by the Board of County Commissioners. We would then submit those, and we plan to propose as conditions that the variances be granted conditioned upon providing the associated waiver or approval. And if those are not provided, then the component would not be upgraded. We also have provided a sound report that demonstrates that the project complies with the sound requirements. There is noise reduction technology and low noise trailing edge components on the blades for up to eight of the turbines to ensure compliance with the current sound requirement. And cultural and wetland avoidance areas, all within previously disturbed areas and addressed there. This also complies with all the Commission's prior orders. And as we discussed a bit earlier, seeking an amendment request to remove the megawatt limitation, but again, this project will not operate above the 48 megawatt. It will have the capacity to do so, but it will not inject into the grid more than 48 megawatts.
I have one quick thing again. So shadow flicker, my favorite topic. Appendix B, towards the end, page 13. This one starts in January already with an inconsistency as far as, you know, it shows it's starting at 8:46 a.m. and continuing until 4 p.m. and it only shows 25 minutes, but it shows two different numbers there. So I'm assuming it's similar to another one that we saw earlier, whereby maybe there's just a data point missing. So I don't have any concern with this. I think that the analysis shows that they're significantly within the parameters. But if we can get that addition, those kind of missing data points or an explanation, or kind of whatever the case may be. No, sundowns and sundowns over here.
Yes, we can provide that some further detail and dig into to be able to answer that question.
That's all I had. Thank you. And just to add to that, I noticed you didn't list the shadow flicker assessment on the things you listed on Molly. So I appreciate that you provided it.
Yes, we did. If I missed it, I apologize. But yes, we did include the shadow flicker assessment, including the unrealistic worst case scenario that for the data is requested in the past. So we will look into that and see if we can get that information to you as well, that updated information.
Okay. Astronomical worst case, I think, is the way it's...
Thank you. That's what I... Worst. probably astronomical is better.
Do you want to copy any commissioners on that information? That's up to you. Just over to you would be okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Are you sure, Julie, you don't want to receive that?
Again, it's going to be a good time.
Defer to Victor. We don't want to steal any of his fun.
One other item that I would like to note, we have had previous discussions about State Historical Society. With this, we will have architectural surveys done from the 1 to 2 mile range. And we've had those contracted. They'll be completed this year, and the studies will be completed this year and be available. And that... would be consistent with prior orders and what the commission would like done there.
Good.
A And about the time we started on this one, I regretted not asking on the previous case. But what about disposal of the old blades?
Yeah, the disposal of the blades, they'll be recycled. That is part of our GE contract. The blades will be recycled. They actually go to a company in Missouri. Veolia is the name of the company who recycles them and uses them. I think concrete is the typical use for them right now, but they will be recycled in that manner.
When to do that, are they cut down on site or hauled in whole? I assume they're not hauled in whole all the way to Missouri.
Yes, they'll be cut down on site into truckloads that are appropriate for the roads. And as they're cut down on roads or up at the site, they'll be capturing all the, I guess the dust, is it considered dust debris? As they're cut, all of that will be removed off-site as well. None of that will be left on the site.
Do you have the name of the recycling facility?
I am not able to disclose that, but it's part of our General Electric contract that they will go to a facility, yes.
Okay.
And just for the other record, we do include a paragraph on the first page of Exhibit A that talks about the repurposing and the cutting down and hauling away. So to the extent that you need it for the other docket, we do have it to reference in the materials that have been provided.
I'll tell you the reason for the question. And, you know, I realize there are things floating around out there, you know, information, but I was reading about a Texas recycling facility that was apparently developed years ago. And this community is just getting very frustrated because nothing ever gets recycled. They're just continuing to haul them in, and there they sit. And kind of the implication in the article was that a lot of these recycling centers aren't really ever recycling anything. And so I was just curious about whether this is real or not, or whether it's just something that's called a recycling center. Again, I guess it's kind of outside of our certification process if it's not in North Dakota. Kind of more of a point of curiosity. So, anything else?
Adam had something, I think.
Yes, I had a question on page 6 about the sound study. It indicates that you have obtained 3 sound waivers from owners of 3 residences. And then I noticed that you have those following 3 letters, I'm assuming, that have been listed in one of the appendices. Is that correct?
Correct. So 3 are participating landowners, and copies of the agreements are enclosed in the exhibit, or in the exhibit to the appendix A to the exhibit A.
Okay. And I noticed the footnote also reads, as a result, only 2 waivers are listed in the report, and noise reduction technology was modeled to ensure compliance without a waiver at 3 residences.
Yeah, so I think the issue was that originally when this was run, it hadn't been yet confirmed if one of the residences was participating or non-participating. After the modeling was conducted, it was confirmed that one of the residences listed as non-participating is participating. So that's why we do have the 3 sound waivers that are included in Appendix A, because there are actually 3 participants that have signed those sound waivers.
Okay, so in the sound study, you modeled under a more conservative approach.
Correct, yes.
So then what then happens when they sign a participating waiver? Can you change the operation of those wind turbines such that maybe it affects someone else who isn't participating?
So what we would do in the end is we will ensure that whatever sound, so if we do not get all the waivers, let's go that route. If we do not have all of the sound waivers, we would ensure that modeling is conducted to confirm that the noise reduction technology that's put in place ensures that that particular receptor is limited to 45 dBA within 100 feet of the receptor. So we would ensure compliance even if others were allowed to be above 45 because of the waiver.
Okay, so for this noise reduction operation, can that change, let's say, from day to day, week to week, you know, et cetera? Like operationally, can it change such that if we set them at a certain limit and we then know that we've got a participating landowner that or non-participating landowner that has then became a participating landowner, can you change the operations or do you still follow the same conservative guidelines that this model would represent?
So just to clarify, it wasn't a change in status. It was just at the time the information provided to the consultant did not reflect that that particular parcel was participating. It just was a data transfer issue. So it hasn't changed status. Additionally, all of the determinations about what noise reduction technology will be used will be made prior to upgrades being done. So there won't be any changes midstream where somebody suddenly signs a waiver, doesn't sign a waiver. Everything will be known prior to the upgrades being installed.
Okay. And do you model after the fact, or is there just one? I mean, would there be any circumstance in which it would require you to go out and provide another sound study?
So modeling is not done in the field. Modeling is done using data.
Computer simulation.
Correct.
Do you ever verify that in the field?
The consultants often do, but it's not typically something that a company would do unless they were an issue was identified. And I guess to that point, the modeling is conservative to ensure that it is complying. So usually there's uncertainty factors and all of this that ensures that the modeling is conservative. So if anything, it's expected to be less than what it's modeled at.
Yeah, I guess my question was whether that modeling actually informed your operation decision on the noise reduction.
The modeling does because it does tell us whether they, without the noise reduction, are above the 45. So if they were above, then the noise reduction technology was installed in the correct locations on the correct turbines to ensure compliance with the 45 dBA requirement.
I think that's all I have for sound.
Well, did you have other stuff besides sound data?
Just to verify, when we talk about the 1.1 times the turbine height from the property line of a non-participating landowner, you've got, it looks like you have to obtain four distinct waivers from three different landowners, is that correct?
It would be waivers from three landowners, and we'd be asking them to waive the property line setback, and that would apply to four turbines.
Yeah, I just noticed that turbine 54 is 7 feet away from meeting that requirement.
I'm sorry, I missed that, Adam.
Oh, turbine 54 is 7 feet away from meeting that requirement.
So, like, it's always,
yes.
It only clears it by 7 feet.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, so for each of these, you're looking at the first page of figure three. We showed both anything that was non-compliant with the asterisk, and then we showed the next one that was compliant just to make it clear. Make it easier to see. And I misspoke. There's two property line waivers needed for four turbines. I mixed up my attributes.
Oh, okay. And then there's one for the county's road setback, right?
Correct. A variance for one turbine for the county.
Okay. And the status of those?
And that will be, we're going to hearing before the county on the 12th, and then hope to have those issued on the 19th by the Board of County Commissioners.
I think that's it for me right now. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Chris, Brian, Victor.
I'm good.
I don't have any. Do you have anything else you want to add?
We do not have anything, and we do not object to everything being part of the record.
And when you say that, everything we are talking about, the application, previous filings, the slides today, as well as the recording.
Correct. Okay. Thank you.
Then all that evidence will become part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record? With that, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.